Blog Talk Radio.
Today, here on Cincy Business Talk with Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer. We'll be talking to business leaders about how they have grown their businesses and people. We discuss new strategies, tactics, and philosophies which lead to positive growth in our marketplace. Our program is sponsored by Sandler Training by Roth & Associates. Each week, we'll talk with our best Cincinnati area top executives about their tools and insights. Our regular listeners will be given the edge that will help them win in a competitive environment which we live. Simple solutions to complex problems which challenge all of us are rarely correct. We will address complex problems or opportunities with appropriate solutions. If you have questions or comments, contact Mike at mikeroth@rothconsulting.net or call Mike at 513-753-9400. Now your host, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer, Mike Roth.
Thanks, Scott. This is Mike Roth. Today I'm here with Martin Lehelmy of UBS, financial advisor, and we're going to have an interesting show today. Before we get started with and get deep into conversation, I figured I'd tell everyone who's going to be on the next couple of shows. Tomorrow, on the 22nd, we're going to have Dan Nyer, who is a developer of properties. On next Thursday, a week from today, June 28th, we're going to have Walter Becker. He is a business broker. He helps people buy and sell small businesses. And on the 29th, we're going to have one of our friends, Richard Puzo, who's going to talk about sky-high weather and the importance of weather and weather forecasting in business. We'll announce the July schedule on tomorrow's program. We really have some fantastic people lined up for the month of July. For those of you who are in Sandler's President's Club, next Monday we're going to have the Networking Works program, and we're going to be working on, for the next 2 weeks, building relationships and building strategic business relationships that result in referrals and introductions. Okay. So let me introduce Martin Lehelmy. I guess I met Martin, 5 or 6 years ago? Maybe it was 10 years ago.
You know, it's been Getting on 10 years ago.
Martin has been in the financial services business for most of those 10 years, has moved up to the highest ranks of that industry. Your professional designation is?
My registered representative and a investment advisor, Series 7, 6, and Series 3 for foreign exchange and commodities. And the title that I carry at UBS is Vice President Investment.
Good. You know, we have a turbulent world economy, and some people think a difficult business environment that we're operating in. Our federal government seems to be in the mode of printing more money, and for a lot of businesses, they're looking for sharper, better ways to do business. Martin, I know you're not an economic forecaster, but by way of introduction, why don't you tell our listeners what you and UBS are feeling about the domestic U.S. economy and the world economy?
Mike, that's a fair question, and economics occupies a better part of my week. And the economists at UBS have opinions to the economy here and in the world as such that in the United States, businesses are doing things. And consumers are out there spending, but there is some slowdown in spending. There is still hiring, but the growth in hiring has slowed down. That's what Ben Bernanke confirmed just 2 days ago. And Asia has been in a real slump, and they're being affected by Europe quite a bit. And the question now is really, you know, how connected of a world, how dependent are we on each other, or is the U.S. going to be the real growth engine to pull everyone out of this global malaise? We're almost in a malaise situation. If you're fixed to the headlines here every day, but trying to get beyond the headlines and some of the drama out of you know, Mediterranean politics, there's real activity, you know, whether it's Apple shipping more iPhones or Caterpillar sending more farm equipment to Russia. So it is not all bad. There are opportunities out there, and we do have a positive estimate on the S&P 500 for year end.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting perspective. In the middle market, where I talk to a lot of people, we've heard some interesting and positive things over the last few months. One of the interesting positive things is that in industrial goods, the amount of product on the shelves has gone to almost zero. In fact, we had one of our guests say that he was expanding his business, expanding his plant, put in new heating and air conditioning for the plant, bought a lot of stuff to install, and discovered with his electrical people that the power transformer from Duke Energy wasn't big enough. So he figured it was going to be a day or two, a week to get a new one. They wanted an 8-month lead time. There was no product on the shelf. It's custom built.
Mike, I like that example. It's absolutely excellent for something we're seeing in the economy we did not see about 10 years ago during the last recession and coming out of that one. When we look back 10, 15 years ago, the productivity renaissance that was enabled through the whole IT revolution in the 90s really enabled Fortune 500 and corporate America to become much more efficient and become global champions of new ways of doing business. And then in the first decade of the new millennium, European and Asian corporations looked to what American corporations have done. It's very interesting now as we're kind of trying to battle out of the Great Depression and trying to get into economic growth again, is that not only are large corporations improving productivity, but small and medium-sized businesses have improved their productivity tremendously. So a lot of tools for productivity have become available to small and medium-sized enterprises. And the good news really is that they're more efficient. They're going to have margins. Maybe only drawback here for a while is that that has resulted in less pickup in hiring because of that efficiency. So people that don't have the job to go back to that they used to have, it's going to take them a while to retrain and find a different business to be productive in.
I can understand that. I was talking to a fellow who called over looking for a new job in a new industry. He wanted to go into sales, and his old world had extremely little sales in it. And the good news for him is that many of our clients who have salespeople are saying to me, Mike, I want to hire A players or A minus players, or at the extremely worst case, a B plus player who wants to be an A player. And they say, Mike, I'm having difficulty finding them. I think they're out there. I know they're out there. And people, company owners, sales managers, vice presidents of sales are looking for those A players because they want to expand their business. Now is the time that there are a lot of job openings and the great people are going to get hired. The people who don't have the skill sets are going to find it difficult.
It's the skill set match that seems to be the real challenge in an advanced economy like ours, an advanced economy like Japan, where never before in history is there such a gap to be filled in terms of skills match. And on a personal editorial note, Mike, I'm wondering if the problem isn't the fact that in the last 20 years we told everyone to go to college and get a college degree. Education to me is the most important thing in society, but I'm questioning if it's been directed appropriately. And I like hearing people talk about vocational training, skills training that you've heard a lot and read a lot about that happens in Germany. And that's why they right now have a low single-digit unemployment.
In fact, I was talking to a billion-dollar corporation in Germany, and at the director level, the gentleman said to me, "Mike, things are really good. We're having difficulty keeping up with orders," which was an extremely encouraging thing to hear. Companies are looking for top players today. They may not find them on the first pass, but they're definitely out there. And companies that are hiring even low entry-level sales grade people are looking. We have one client that has seven seats. Only four are filled. We can't find the other three on an inside sales job. And on an outside sales job, there are probably another two slots that are open, and we don't have the right people in the right geography.
You know, Mike, it's great to see companies that invest like that in their workforce. And the ultimate goal is to get the skills, competencies where these people are going to turn out quality products and services. And in this, you know, advanced economic environment we're in, consumers have a lot of choices. And more, if they can afford it, they're going to go for quality products and services. They only want to buy the best. It's a very competitive environment. And we're in a day and age where I see a lot of flight to quality.
It's more expensive to buy it twice or three times when the first product you bought didn't work.
Yeah, that's, I think, from personal experience, I can vouch for that.
Well, we both have had that experience. When we look at our economy as a whole, there's a lot of room, and I hear stories of people taking production back to America at the same time as I hear people taking call center jobs to other countries. And does UBS have a call center?
Mike, we do.
Mm-hmm. And where is it located?
We have them around the world.
Mm-hmm.
We have some here. We do have some in Asia. We do have some in Europe. We have a global footprint of clients in 150 countries and 65,000 staff around the world. So we probably focus first on the function of it. There's probably been some cost efficiencies we've gained by rationalizing into you know, lower costs resources.
Well, not your company, but another company that unfortunately I still do business with. I discovered moved their call center from Cincinnati to the Philippines, and I've had the unfortunate experience of having to talk to them for technical support on two or three occasions over the last couple of months. And these people don't know anything. They follow a script. They don't understand what I'm saying. I barely understand what they're saying. And situations are not resolved in a timely and efficient fashion.
I think that can be a turnoff, Mike. And,
you think it can? You think?
Experience like that, you know, but there are examples going the other way. I think through technology and the fact that Asian labor markets are getting more expensive, services are being brought here to this side. And the best example I like to point to is a real localized service. If I have problems with my Apple product, I can go to the Genius Bar at the Apple Store in Kenwood.
Mm-hmm.
And get a live, competent person who can understand me quickly and easily, and solve my problem, and educate me at the same time. It's a wonderful experience.
Yes, there are people who are attempting to clone the Apple Store for their products because they have a better retail system. My wife had a problem with an Apple product, and I frankly couldn't solve it. I thought the product was defective. She took it back to the Genius Bar, and the guy said, "Oh, ma'am, you haven't plugged in the plug the whole way."
Hey.
And as soon as he did that, worked like a charm.
that took probably three nanoseconds, and if that was over a phone to a call center on another part of the planet, then that could have been a 33-minute phone call.
Right, to find out that you had to put 90 pounds of pressure to get the jack on the headphone into the Apple product so that it was pushed in all the way. It was an interesting scenario.
You know, the best companies in the world, and we just talked about one of them, and there are many others here, our brain thinks back to being practical for you and I, and then we're willing to pay for it. I'm going to pay a little bit extra for that Apple product, but you know what? It pays off from saved time, saved headaches.
Saved aggravation. We're going to take a short commercial break here, and we'll be back after these words. If you're interested in asking Martin a direct question, you can call in on 646-595-4916. Again, that was 646-595-4916. Hi, this is Mike Roth, founder of Sandler Training by Roth & Associates, the most experienced Sandler sales trainer in Cincinnati. You've heard our commercials about sales and sales management, but you haven't made the call for some reason. Maybe you're having your best year ever. Maybe you think a sales development company won't work in your industry. You're different. I wish I had a nickel for every time I heard that. Maybe you're afraid that if you called, you'd buy something. If you're happy with all your sales and profits and believe you have all the answers or simply don't see yourself investing in yourself or your people, then don't make the call. We have nothing for you. For over 20 years, we've been coaching, mentoring business owners and sales professionals who are serious about their careers. So if you believe that Sandler sales training might make you better, faster, meaner, and stronger, call me at 513-646-6523 or register for our next open house. Roth & Associates, the most experienced sales trainer in Cincinnati. You can check us at www.rothconsulting.net. This is Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer. At the first sign of trouble, there are three types of business leader. The first type of leader is like a turtle. He pulls his head and tail in and hides in his shell. Turtles hunker down, just trying to survive. The second type of leader is an opportunist. They're like eagles. Eagles spread their wings and take advantage of the winds. They catch the storm wind and rise to new heights. The third group, between turtles and eagles, are called turkeys. Turkeys are average and anxious. They huddle together and move. They never soar. However, turkeys are easy prey for those who seize the opportunity and soar. If someone in your industry goes out of business, are you going to get the business? The question is, which type of leader are you? Will you seize the opportunities to take market share and grow, or will your fate be like the turkeys? If you're serious about growth, call me to arrange a confidential meeting, 513-646-6523, or check our website at rothconsulting.net. This is Mike Roth. I'm back here with Martin Wilhelmi of UBS. Martin, why don't you tell our audience what your path was and how you got here to UBS. You graduated from an international college?
Yeah, Mike. I had my undergraduate from the University of Cincinnati in engineering and worked in the 90s at Anderson Consulting, which renamed to Accenture. That was sort of in the new economy, process engineering kind of revolution that was occurring in the United States. And then had an international assignment where then I kind of took an opportunity to jump and pick up an MBA, Master's of Business, at INSEA, which is a business school in France. And they're sort of...
What was the name again?
INSEAD, I'll spell it out, INSEAD. Don't ask me about that acronym, but the tagline is Business School for the World. They're a sister school of Wharton. And after that, came back to Cincinnati, and I worked at the Fifth Third Private Bank and Fifth Third Securities, and now in UBS Financial Services, Inc., which has about 230 employees here in Cincinnati, and according to some data, the largest asset manager in Cincinnati, about $15 billion in assets, between two offices in Kenwood and downtown Cincinnati Scripps Center.
Good. So if someone wanted to get a hold of you, Martin, to ask a question or some advice, what phone number should they use and
You can feel free to call me anytime at my desk, direct 513-369-4021. I'd be happy to answer questions, and we're there.
Good. During the break, Martin and I were talking about gold as or a commodity as a hedge against inflation. We didn't get very far, Martin. So let's start again. What do you think of precious metals as a hedge against inflation with the printing presses running wild in Washington?
The presses are running wild. The inflation could be seen in parts of the economy, like in foods, but net on average, the CPI is not really giving us inflation. Housing is a big component, and with that deflationary force, there's really not that big inflation across the board that one might have expected. And the big part of that is that the money, all that excess sort of new money, is actually not circulating through the economy. There's not that momentum of money changing hands. It's actually, you know, with the banks, and the banks park it back at the Fed, and this sort of have this little relationship where the federal government says, dear banks, we ask you to hold more assets so that you're less risky. And guess what assets you have to hold? You have to hold U.S. treasuries. And so it's a funny thing, and a big part of this all is to kind of help support the housing market. But, you know, what do people do when they're inflationary times? You know, the Weimar Republic is a famous example, and there's other examples in history. And precious metals are where people have gone to find security and a sense of knowing. And gold is a very real thing, although it conjures up a lot of emotions, just like an Apple product, by the way, that we just talked about. But, you know, what is gold? It certainly is a store of value.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, and 2 years ago, our desk of precious metals in Zurich, together with analysts in London and New York, they did a detailed study of gold. And one observation to support the thesis of a store value was, you know, why would the price of gold really have increased here in the United States over the last years,
mm-hmm,
if there wasn't that much inflation? And you know what they did? They took a basket of currencies, Mike. They took the dollar, of course, the British pound, the yen, the euro, and then they went back 300 years. And, of course, they looked at the predecessor currencies, and you put them all on top of each other, and they found a very interesting thing over these 300 years.
What did they find, Martin?
That gold essentially keeps pace with inflation. So it's a store value that says, you know, if I put my money in gold, it's not going to lose its worth over the long run, regardless of what happens in the world.
So gold as an investment or a hedge against inflation,
it will keep pace with inflation.
It won't beat inflation.
In certain periods, it could. You know, you have demand drivers being the Indian jewelry industry,
mm-hmm,
the central banks.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two biggest demand drivers. So if they really want it, you know, hey, gold is going to work in your favor. But can it beat inflation? I don't know. It's a good question. It will certainly match it over the long run.
When you talk about gold, there are various forms of owning gold, from owning ingots to currently minted coins like the Kugaran to numismatic grade old U.S. coins prior to 1933 to exchange traded funds. What do you think are the best ways that people should put a portion of their portfolio in gold or silver?
There are many ways, and we'll get to silver in a moment. I think GLD, the exchange traded fund for gold is probably the easiest way to access gold, because iShares company will physically purchase gold and warehouse it. So if you buy, you know, shares in GLD, that's matched with real gold. So they're not trying to create some synthetic replica of the price of gold.
So how does the investor know that there's real gold to back up the investment?
Well, I guess you have to take the face value of the prospectus that BlackRock, who owns iShares, has written. There is a real way to redeem your shares in GLD for the physical gold if you actually own 100,000 shares of GLD. One share is like around $160. Okay, so that's a lot of money. But there are other ways to own gold. I'm not an expert in the field of coins. Mike, I know you've had personal experiences where, of course, the physical aspect of storing it is something you have to plan for. The commissions are high, I think.
Well, definitely they're much higher than I think they should be.
What kind of commissions have you experienced, Mike?
In excess of 20%. Being built into the buy price of the coin.
That's not unusual.
And the real question is, what happens on the sell side?
What kind of pricing you might get? Is it built into the spread? And
well, there's a different transaction. If I buy a gold coin from you here in this room and then sell it back to you a year later here in this room, there's a fixed transaction. I've heard some stories where people are shipping coins back to dealers who are claiming that the box that they came in was empty and the product wasn't actually in the box.
Yeah.
That actually did happen to us in the computer business about 20 years ago.
There are practical aspects, to that. UBS lets investors buy physical golds, usually $1 million minimum, for just a 1% commission fee and a 0.25% annual custody fee. But it really is only suitable for a person of substantial wealth to go out and buy real gold in those quantities. And
then it's ingot as opposed to coins.
And then it's ingot. You know, what are you going to do with that? Well, you know it's in a vault somewhere. At certain times in the market cycle, some analysts of gold will say, gosh, go out and buy the gold miners. You can buy them more cheaply, or they're going to grow faster than the price of gold. That's going to start getting a bit more speculative, where you got to understand, a lot about these mining companies to make that leap to invest.
Well, a mining company is a hell of a big risk.
You know, when there's financing problems, like during the last liquidity crisis, mining companies are very cash flow needy, Mike. And if there are problems, that share price can, drop in half. That's not what I would call store value investment.
Or go to zero real fast.
If you're an equity investor, you take full risk.
Mm-hmm. Full risk means you lose everything.
Yeah, it's not a safe investment. Real gold I might consider safe.
Mm-hmm.
A store of value, usually an inflation meter.
A hedge,
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take a short break here. Again, if you want to call in and ask Martin a question, the number is 646-595-4916. And let's listen to a Saint LaRule. Rule 43, that's one we haven't played before.
Hello, I'm Ken Edmondson with Sandler Training, and I'm here to talk to you about rule number 43. That rule says you don't win by getting a yes. You learn to win by getting a no. That sounds strange, doesn't it? Here's the reason we say that. Yes is exciting. Yes always motivates us as salespeople. Who doesn't like to get a yes? But there are four reasons that getting a no is probably, in most cases, a better way to learn to sell. Here's reason number one. Most likely, you're going to get a lot more no's, right? Most likely, the answer you are getting from your prospect will be a no, because that's what they're prepared to do when you come in to meet with them or to talk with them. Their normal knee-jerk reaction is a no. Get ready for it. Be prepared for it. If a no destroys your confidence, causes your day to go negative, then you're not ready for the job at hand. So, number one, expect a no, because that's probably what it's going to be. We're going to get a lot more of those. Number two, not only is it always a no, but every time you get a no, you learn something. You get a lesson. A lesson will be, how can I do it better? What can I do that will help me in the next one? Every no that a professional salesperson gets is a valuable experience, a valuable lesson of how to get a yes. Thirdly, if you get a no, it should make you stronger, not weaker. The more you experience this, the stronger you get. Your whole psychology to selling gets stronger as you hear no. You realize they're not rejecting me, they're not rejecting my product or service. It's probably a temporary thing, and I need to be better, I need to be prepared for that no. It makes me stronger. Here's probably the best of the four reasons. Every time you get a no, you are closer to getting a yes. Every time you get a no from that prospect, you're closer to getting that prospect to say yes. Every time you get a no from that prospect, you're closer to getting the next prospect to say yes. Try it. You may find that by going for no, you become stronger and you find more yeses. So going for yes isn't the way to win. Going for no will teach you to learn or help you to learn to win much faster. Rule number 43.
Well, this is Mike Roth. I'm back here with Martin Wilhelmy. And Martin, I think what we'll do is ask a different kind of a question. And it's really more about the world economy and pricing. We've noticed over the last several months that the price of crude oil has gone from $103 a barrel down to $83 a barrel. It's about a 20% reduction in cost, yet the price of gasoline at the pump has reacted by going down 20 or 30 cents. What do you think about that?
Mike, it's a great question, and the problem has to do with a lack of refining capacity here in this country. So let me address that in a bit more in depth, but let's take a step back to the greater energy problem and how that actually sags out from the gold conversation that we just had.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, we saw the price of gold increase substantially over the last 5 years.
But for the last 6 months, it's been kind of stable to going down slightly.
Exactly. It's been very interesting. And here's the relationship between oil and gold.
Mm.
Yeah, over the, go back the last decade of oil business has been, you know, a multi-trillion dollar petrodollar kind of trade, where all these dollars have come to these petroleum-producing nations who have had a mandate in the last 10 years, Mike, to diversify their petrodollars into some other currencies. They said, you know, we can't have all of the money in dollars. Let's diversify a bit, and that's, you know, probably a reasonable thing. And where do you go? Well, the biggest other currencies are the euro and the yen, and, you know, there's a little bit of Canadian dollars and Swiss franc available, and that's actually pushed up the euro and the yen over the last years and made the dollar relatively weaker, not so much because there are big problems in the United States. There are some problems, but it was really a consequence of the diversification of the oil trade. And then a weaker dollar is translated into a stronger gold,
mm-hmm.
if you looked in dollars. But if you took and looked at a basket of currencies of euros, dollars, British pounds, and so forth, the price of gold didn't dramatically increase in the last years. It did increase, but not as much as just if we looked at it against dollars. So what's going on with all this oil money? It has been flowing to the petroleum-producing countries, but that tide is slowing down. And that's the tide of dollars going to those oil-producing countries is slowing down, Mike.
So that brings us really to what's happening here in Ohio, especially in northern Ohio. The oil coming out of a shale through fracking, where maybe there were a few hundred wells today, and maybe 3 years from today there'll be 10,000 wells to bring oil out here in the States. What happens then?
Well, what we predict in the next 10 years is if this production growth continues both in natural gas, dry gas, and wet liquids gas, and in fracking for oil, that we could be energy self-sufficient. And that coupled together with, a little bit of wind and a little, some improvements in fuel efficiencies, our dependence on foreign energy. I'm going to include Canada as part of the North American story. Let's say our dependence on ex-North American energy couldn't get close to zero in the next 10 years. So that's if the free markets are allowed to operate. If regulators, pay attention but don't try to get in the way, the need to buy energy from abroad is going to go down. The dollar will go up.
And what will happen to our business economy, in your opinion, based on us being able to, in the next year or two, we're going to be in the beginning stages of producing a lot more domestic energy?
Mike, I see a whole lot of things, and mostly good. Natural gas fracking is adding tens of thousands of jobs. There's the trickle down, so we're adding hundreds of thousands of new jobs across the country. There are ancillary business areas like trucking and transportation that are benefiting. A new steel plant has been built in Youngstown that is now supplying rolled steel to the natural gas drillers.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
There's a nice positive spiral to this. Steel is very natural gas dependent. The steel foundries are now having cheaper input costs. It's costing them less to make steel. And guess who's afraid of this formula is that the Asian and European competitors are going to have a disadvantage. They're going to have much higher input costs.
For steel.
For steel production. The even bigger story is in chemicals, Mike. So our chemical champions like Dow Chemical, DuPont, Air Products and Chemicals, companies like that are now moving production back to the United States. Dow Chemical is building its first ethylene plant in North America in the last 20 years.
Wow. I didn't know that.
They're building it here, Mike.
Not here in Cincinnati.
They're building it in Texas.
Well, that figures.
But there are a lot of things happening in Ohio. The Dow Chemical, to continue that thought, is exporting more and more PVC. Okay.
So PVC is a type of plastic, so this would be a positive nudge for the entire plastics industry.
Yeah, it's great. There's plastics in so many facets of our daily lives and the economy, Mike, that this is going to be a huge economic driver. Our study has an estimate of at least an additional 0.5% GDP growth in the next 5 years due to the natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
If we extrapolate and hope for additional trickle-down effects, this could be an additional 1%.
Well, there's a lot of construction cost and infrastructure that has to be built for these fracking wells, even if they don't go into production in year one, they have to put in the roads to get to the site where they're going to put the well in.
Yeah.
And another guest told me that there are like 7 10-cylinder diesel engines that have to go up on each well site.
It's phenomenal what all goes into that. And there's so many other things going on, like the Chrysler is now building a Dodge pickup truck with a natural gas engine. And there are already buses in just different cities running on natural gas. It's a real revolution. You know, I don't know if we're going to call it a revolutionary moment, but it's a real renaissance in North American energy. If we get 1% additional GDP growth in this country over the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be considerable wealth effect where, you know, consumers are going to spend more and it's going to drive other wheels in the economy.
Mm-hmm. Let's change gears here for a second, Martin, and let's talk about what you see as prudent for our baby boomers out there to think about in terms of retirement planning. What are the opportunities?
The opportunities in retirement planning could probably go back to what we were just discussing in the North American energy scene and the other parts of the economy. One of my favorite income recommendations to people looking for income are the Natural Gas Master Limited Partnerships, MLPs for short. These are sort of infrastructure toll road investments that charge tariffs for delivering the natural gas to power plants.
And I'm sorry, Martin. You know, you're right. Using some terms that some of our people might not understand. You said charge tariffs.
Tariffs. I mumbled that one. I apologize. And thanks for raising your hand there, Mike. So a tariff, you know, a charge on delivering volume of liquid to a power plant is kind of a toll road, gatekeeper kind of way of collecting revenue. And, you know, from a volume perspective, that's just going up everywhere, residential to businesses to, again, power plants, you know, at the Duke Energies of the world. And the MLP investments we consider on the risk perspective to be somewhere between bonds and typical equities. So less volatile, produce nice income, and have a bit of an inflation hedge as people continue to use this energy. And if there's inflation, these pipeline companies can just charge a higher toll. And we like this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the quest for yield, there's a challenge, you know, to find something that is going to provide the income but not give you all the risk of the world.
Right. Let's take a short break here, Martin. We'll be back after these messages.
This is Mike Roth, Cincinnati's most experienced Sandler trainer. At the first sign of trouble, there are 3 types of business leader. The first type of leader is like a turtle. He pulls his head and tail in and hides in his shell. Turtles hunker down, just trying to survive. The second type of leader is an opportunist. They're like eagles. Eagles spread their wings and take advantage of the winds. They catch the storm wind and rise to new heights. The third group, between turtles and eagles, are called turkeys. Turkeys are average and anxious. They huddle together and move. They never soar. However, turkeys are easy prey for those who seize the opportunity and soar. If someone in your industry goes out of business, are you going to get the business? The question is, which type of leader are you? Will you seize the opportunities to take market share and grow, or will your fate be like the turkeys? If you're serious about growth, call me to arrange a confidential meeting, 513-646-6523, or check our website at rothconsulting.net.
Hi, Hey, I'm Eddie Huff from Sandler Training, here to talk about rule number 18. Don't paint seagulls in your prospect's picture. Have you ever jumped in with a great idea that killed your sale? Let me tell you a story about Nancy. Nancy's a second grader in the public school system. She's just finished art class, and she's painted a pretty good picture. It's got a house and sun in it, but it's all over here on the left side. Nancy's art teacher comes by and says, "Oh, Nancy, that's a very nice picture, but honey, you need something over here on the right side to balance it out." She picks up a paintbrush and paints a seagull over on the right side of the picture. Nancy's very upset. She goes home. That night at the dinner table, Nancy's very quiet, and she pulls out her picture, except it's all folded up into a small square. The dad unfolds and says, "Nancy, darling, that is a beautiful picture. Very well done. And I especially love the seagull." Well, Nancy bursts into tears, leaves the room. He finds out that the reason she's so upset is because she didn't like the seagull. You see, Nancy didn't put it there. A teacher did. The point is, your prospect has a picture of their needs before you show up for the sales interview. If you start painting seagulls into your prospect's picture, they're going to become just as uncomfortable as Nancy. Every time you make a change to their picture, it leads to mistrust. It leads to rejection of your products and your services. Look, if their picture needs adjusting, instead of telling them or painting a seagull on their picture, let's do it indirectly. Let's help the prospect discover it on their own. Rule number 18, don't paint seagulls in your prospect's picture.
This is Mike Roth. I'm back here with Martin Wilhelmi. We're going to change the subject again, Martin, and maybe it's a little bit the same, a little bit different. I have a theory here that simple solutions to complex problems are almost always wrong. So we have a complex problem for people in their 50s, 60s, contemplating taking Social Security in the next 5 or 10 or even 15 years. What kind of complex solutions are you guys at UBS recommending for people to protect their retirements?
Mike, I'm glad you put it in exactly that way. Complexity is the reality, and the first step to facing that is you gotta understand, you gotta do something. You know, if you're there and you're faced with your financial future, and you realize you haven't made progress and you're not certain about the course, you just have to admit that. And, mm-hmm. and if you have a problem, then go do something about it. And usually it helps to work with a significant other to kind of formulate it in an emotional sense, but. Ultimately, it's usually to your best benefit to find a good professional that will help you, define the issues, the problems, real concretely, so we can take some action steps. And in some ways, you gotta define yourself a plan, a financial plan. It can be on paper. It doesn't necessarily have to be on paper, but it has to be pretty concrete. Most financial plans will have, several aspects to, the assets that you got, your liabilities, and cash flow.
Well, you have to have the cash flow and you have to have the plan, because if you don't have a set of goals, you'll never get there. In Sandler, we talk about SMART goals: specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, time-bound. And in creating a financial plan for people, generally, there are people see two types of financial advisors: the fee-based ones that are taking a percent or so of the assets under management, and the commission-based. Which one do you think is better for the investor?
It might depend on the situation. Typically, fee-based might be more objectively inclined. Not necessarily. There's fee-based, fee-only, and commissionable ways of providing services. And the audience out here today might have had experiences with several of those approaches. The most common commissionable product is usually some type of life insurance product where you get a product and the people in the business sort of get paid internally and you don't see what you pay them. And that's fairly common. Fee-based is usually someone has a portfolio of money and it gets managed for, 1%, 2% or somewhere in between of assets per year. A fee-only planner, someone you pay an hourly fee for and they give you advice and then you go do something else with it on your own. That last approach is somewhat rare because there ends up being a disconnect to the actual implementation. I would like to see...
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that disconnect?
Yeah, somebody can write a financial plan for you and then walk away and say, okay, here it is, you're on your own, I'm not going to influence the outcome for you. You go on E-Trade and then do what you want to do the most cost-effective way. Well, now you're on your own, you got some plan, and you might implement it the wrong way. You might get carried away emotionally. It usually helps to have a professional with you along the road.
I think so. We have a rule here that he who is emotionally involved loses by definition.
Yeah, it happens all the time. There institution called Dalbar.
An institution called?
Dalbar, D-A-L-B-A-R. They are a financial services surveying firm that has found that most investors will hold a mutual fund for 2.5 years and usually sell their funds low because they bought them high.
Exactly what my uncle never told me to do. He said, buy low, sell high.
Gosh, it's just so much easier to buy high and sell low because, that's where you realize I'm up high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was quite a contrarian.
A good investor. I would have loved to have met him and gotten to know him. But the financial professional relationship, Mike, that I believe is best for clients generally is the professional who has the capability to offer a combination of fee-based, fee-only, and commissionable product.
Which only brings up the question, and I know we don't have a lot of time left, but fiduciary responsibility.
Yeah, fiduciary responsibility is part of the code of fee-based planners where they're supposed to act in the best interest of a client.
Not in the best interest of the mutual fund or the stock trading company that they're a part of.
A stockbroker places a commissionable trade has to provide something suitable. Might not be the best, but it has to be suitable.
That's a lower level of responsibility than fiduciaries.
Slightly lower level. However, a fiduciary responsibility could get a little bit washed out in the sense that sometimes maybe limits the choices available to a client. And if a client wants something of a creative idea or something very new, fiduciary investment platforms might not make that available to you.
Mm.
So if somebody says they're fee-based only and that's all they do, you might not get access to some products.
So, in other words, if I wanted to buy stock in this new company called Simple TV, I don't know if you've heard of them, new over-the-counter, I think.
In most cases, fiduciary investment platform, you would not be able to get that. At the topic of master limited partnerships, those types
of stocks.
The
topic of what?
The natural gas, master limited partnerships we spoke about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Those have just started to come to some of those fiduciary platforms. They were not available and still aren't available in many platforms.
Okay. Our people who are interested in investments, again, can get a hold of you to talk after the show at
369-4021.
That's in the 513 area code.
Yeah, be happy to take your call and tell you more about what we talked about today and answer any of your questions.
And that's really interesting that there are partnerships in natural gas, which is going into production, which we see as the fuel to take us out for the next 10 years and beyond to make America energy independent. And the small investor who doesn't have $5 million to put in could actually get involved in those partnerships.
It's a great story where you can be part of this grand story within the North American energy renaissance that's happening right around the corner here in northern Ohio, Pennsylvania, in the Dakotas, in Texas. It's very real. In northern Ohio, we have new clients of UBS who used to be farmers.
Now they're multimillionaires.
They're multimillionaires. They sold their land or they gave leasing rights to large drilling companies like Chesapeake or to smaller drilling companies like Bronco and Quicksilver. And with that windfall, we've helped them with some tax-efficient transactions to take their windfall and put them into their own LLC and pay their taxes over a deferred period of time so they don't get hit all at once.
Mm-hmm. So, Martin, we've got a couple of minutes left, maybe a minute and a half. What are the thoughts that you can give our listeners for growth and protecting assets during the next year?
To both grow and to protect your assets, you just got to hedge your bets and do a few different things. Get with a professional, and the solutions might be differently suitable for one person to another, whether you pursue an annuity product with certain guarantees or mutual funds, or if you go for individual securities. Really like a Kraft stock, an Apple stock, a four-year bond from Cincinnati Bell that pays 7%.
When you said Kraft, what did you mean? You didn't mean like the cheese company.
Yeah, it's the defensive stock that we like the best if you want defensive growth, you know.
Oh, okay. So we had Greg Hardman on the other week, and he makes Kraft beers.
You know, Mike, that sounds like actually a very good investment.
Craft beer.
Craft beer. You think that could ferment into something really?
It won't be a cheesy investment. That's for sure.
Hey, you know, I think that could work better at the bar.
Yeah. Well, his Moorline Lagerhouse seems to be jammed, and that was a good investment for him and his partners.
Yeah, well, we should go down there, shouldn't we?
Well, maybe after the show, Martin. We got to wrap up here, and again, I want to thank you, Martin, for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting us.
I am going to give you a copy of Sandler's latest book, Sandler Insights, 11 Sandler Insights.
I'd love to read it. Thank you very much.
That is a great book.
Thank you, and happy investing and for your retirement.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions or comments, contact Mike at mikeroth@rothconsulting.net or call Mike at 513-753-9400.